Penguin Random House Audio presents The Truth According to Us by Annie Barrows. Read for you by Anne-Marie Lee, Tara Sands, and Julia Whalen. With Cassandra Campbell, Danny Campbell, Mark Deakins, Kimberly Farr, Kirby Hayborn, Lincoln Hoppe, Paul Michael, Linda Montana, and Arthur Morey. Chapter 1.
In 1938, the year I was 12, my hometown of Macedonia, West Virginia, celebrated its sesquicentennial, a word I thought had to do with fruit for the longest time. In school, we commemorated the occasion as we commemorated most occasions, with tableaus, one for each of the major events in Macedonia's history. There weren't many, hardly enough to stretch out across 8 grades. But the teachers eked them out the best they could. If it hadn't been for the war between the states, I don't know what they would have done. When Virginia seceded from the Union, Western Virginia got mad and seceded right back into it. All except 4 little counties, one of them ours, that stuck out their tongues at West Virginia and declared themselves part of the Confederacy. A piece of sass with long consequences in the way of road paving and school desks. Tucked up in a crook between the Potomac and the Shenandoah, Macedonia was a junction for generals and railroads alike. And by the time Lee hung up his sword at Appomattox, the town had changed hands 47 times, 6 of them in 1 day. Art teachers dearly loved to get up a scene of the townspeople stuffing their Confederate flags up the chimney as the Union troops marched in and yanking them back down again as the troops departed. The 4th, 5th, and 6th graders got the war scenes, and the 7th and 8th graders got the short end of the stick, because not a thing happened in Macedonia after 1865, except the roundhouse blowing up and the American Everlasting Hosiery Company opening its doors. Half the town worked in that mill, and the other half wished it did. But there was not much about the American Everlasting Hosiery Company that looked good in a tableau. Sometimes, the teachers gave up and killed 2 birds with 1 stone by making the 7th graders march across the stage, waving socks, while the 8th grader sang the Star-Spangled Banner behind them. In 1938, though, the 8th grade hit pay dirt, because Mrs. Roosevelt drove through town. She stopped at the square, took a drink from our sulfur spring water fountain, made a face, and drove away. That was plenty for a tableau, except that instead of making a face, the 8th grade Mrs. Roosevelt said, "The people of Macedonia are lucky to receive the benefits of healthful mineral water." My sister Bird and I laughed so hard, we got sent into the hall. Once the curtain had clunked down on our tableaus, and we'd been herded back into our classrooms, I supposed that Macedonia's sesquicentennial festivities were concluded. Hadn't we just covered 150 years of history in 23 minutes flat? We had. But not a week later came the Decoration Day Parade, and that, I realized later, was the real beginning of the sesquicentennial. Later still, I realized that everything began that day. Everything that was to heave itself free of its foundations over the course of the summer began to rattle lightly on the morning of the parade. That was when I first heard of Layla Beck, when I began to wonder about my father, and when I noticed I was being lied to and decided to leave my childhood behind. I have since wondered, of course, how my life, and my father's and my Aunt Jotty's, too, would have been different if I'd decided to stay at home that morning. This is what's called the enigma of history, and it can drive you out of your mind if you let it. Jotty and I were packed tight on the sidewalk, together with everyone else in town, to watch the parade. Usually it wasn't much. The Decoration Day Parade, just a matter of assorted veterans looking grim and the high school marching band. But this year, in honor of the sesquicentennial, we'd been promised an extra fancy show, a real spectacle. And that was what we got. The United Daughters of the Confederacy flounced out first, with the ladies of the Grand Army of the Republic hot on their heels. Then the Rotary Band struck up with patriotic tunes, which was a lot to manage on four trumpets, and had a terrible effect on the Pony Brigade. The veterans marched along, and a pair of girls in skimpy outfits flung batons in the air, just exactly like a movie parade, except that only one of them could catch. We even had a float, the Apple Princess and her blossoms, smiling away on the back of a truck. Out came the mayor, waving from his big green car, and behind him was Mr. Parker Davies, who had got himself up in a sword and knee pants to look like General Magnus Hamilton, the founder of Macedonia. Which put me in mind of a question I had always wanted to ask. I nudged my Aunt Jotty. How come he called it Macedonia? She tilted her dark eyes down to mine. The general was a great admirer of the Macedonian virtues. Huh. That was news to me. What are they, the Macedonian virtues? Don't say huh. Ferocity and devotion. The Apple Princess joggled by. It was Elsie Averill in a white dress. A lady standing just behind me leaned forward for a better look, and a big whiff of jungle gardenia went up my nose. I squeezed closer to Jotty. Did he have them? I asked. Jotty's eyes followed Elsie for a bit. Did he have what? She murmured. Jotty, I recalled her. Did General Hamilton have the Macedonian virtues? The general? She lifted one eyebrow. The general once chopped off a soldier's toes to keep the poor man from deserting. You tell me, Willa, is that ferocity, devotion, or just plain crazy? I eyed Mr. Parker Davies, imagining his bloodied sword raised high, a little toe speared on the point. That was ferocity, I was pretty sure. Do I have them? I asked hopefully. Jotty smiled. Ferocity and devotion? You want those? They're virtues, aren't they? I asked. They surely are. Ferocity, devotion, and a nickel will get you a cup of coffee at the Pickus Cafe. I made a face at her and she laughed. The parade passed by, turned around on itself, and straggled back up Prince Street. I thought maybe I had a chance at devotion. Now the Macedonia Chamber of Commerce made the turn and marched by, eight men in identical tan hats and overcoats. They looked like a set of matching boy dolls, only embarrassed. Jotty chuckled and flapped her little flag. Hooray! She cheered. Hooray for our brave boys in the Chamber of Commerce! They pretended they didn't hear, all except one. Jotty, he said, swiveling around. Jotty drew in a sharp breath, and I saw two spots of pink appear on her cheeks. She started to put up her hand, let it drop, and then changed her mind and lifted it in a little wave. That set him up. Now he started smiling like crazy, and even though the parade was moving again, he called out to her, I was hoping I might see you today, Jotty. I was thinking I might. A man behind bumped into him then, and he had to walk on. But he kept turning around to wave at her as he went. Who is that? I asked. Nothing happened, so I gave her a poke. Who was that, Jotty? Saul, she said. Saul McCubbin. She opened her purse and rummaged inside. I had a handkerchief in here this morning. And that would have been that, if I hadn't heard a low laugh behind me. It was Mrs. Jungle Gardenia. Shoo, good thing old Felix ain't here, she hooted softly to herself. What? I whirled around, wondering who she was and how she knew my father. She didn't look like someone he would know. She was wearing a young lady's dress, even though she wasn't a young lady, and her face was white with powder. She caught my stare and wiggled her drawn-on eyebrows at me. I turned back to Jotty quick. Jotty, I said, giving her another poke. Who's Saul McCubbin?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?